Hello, I'm Francis Seeley from GlobalNet 21, and in this podcast, which we hope you will join us in, Hannah Dyson talks to Libra Ravindran about poetry and politics. And in the interview, she would talk to Libra about how language, particularly poetry, plays an integral part in encouraging or discouraging BAME inclusion within green movements and local community action. She also explores with Libra how language has helped Libra contribute to the recent actions and strategy of Extinction Rebellion. Libra's poetry depicts the desperation of the protesters, their passion for change, and the grave situation our planet faces if we don't act now. So I hope you'll listen to this podcast.
And today I have the wonderful Libra Ravindran. He's a poet, an activist for Extinction Rebellion Enfield. And I first met Libra outside the Civic Centre in Enfield, and he was joining one of the protests, very, very active, and I approached him for an interview, and he, noticed how wonderful he was with words. He's a great advocate for green movements. He's very active on the poetry scene. And today we're going to be talking about poetry and rebellion, because Libra is involved in both, and the two are very interlinked. So I'd like to say welcome, Libra, to the webinar.
Hello.
And hi, Libra. Could you briefly sort of tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, you know, where you're at now, just to give us an idea?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, thank you for inviting me onto this platform. It's great to be here. As you say, my name, Libra Ravindran. I am of Sri Lankan descent, so that's where my heritage lies. Both my parents actually come from the same village, a small town in the north of Jaffna, which is the northernmost city in Sri Lanka. That's where my journey started in a metaphorical sense. And I was born in Norway. So that's where I spent my childhood, and I grew up in a small town in Norway. My dad had to emigrate. He was a refugee asylum seeker when he was around age of 25. As a result of the civil war, which was ongoing, the 25-year conflict, which ended about 10 years ago. And my mom shortly followed, and I was born along with my siblings. And after a while, we ended up to move to London. And since 2003, I've been living in Southgate, which is Enfield. And here's the connection here to Enfield.
Okay, wow, Libra. So I think growing up, when you were growing up, you were learning different languages, not just one language, Tamil in Sri Lanka, but you were learning Norwegian, and then you had to learn English. How do you think that has had an effect on your brain and your ability with words? Because you are very, very talented as a poet, a writer, performer. So how do you think learning languages has affected you?
Well, thank you for that. The fact that I've had these different languages has helped me understand, especially cultures and traditions, where I come from, a sense of belonging. I think language, in a certain sense, transports you to different places, different cultures, histories, religions, and so forth. It's a means of communication, but it's also something more than that. It kind of embodies a whole world in itself. And I think language is really powerful in that sense. The way we use language as a form of kind of verbal communication is just one aspect to it. And I think there's so many different aspects to this kind of form of communication. And you can have slightly different cultural understandings. For example, when I speak Tamil, I'm immediately transported into my parents' kind of world and my ancestors and the whole kind of ancient lineage. With Norwegian, it reminds me of my childhood, especially just a strong resonance with my childhood, whereas English is my adult world. And it's just different aspects of myself or different times that it represents.
Yeah, and I noticed with your poetry, it's a lot of imagery transports you to different countries. So your kind of experience and your family heritage with in Sri Lanka and Norway, that makes you kind of think in an international way.
Yeah, definitely. I had that appeal for globalism, this idea that I can reach out and I can see human in another part of the world that I haven't encountered before and relate to them. That kind of human to human connection. Sometimes kind of that language barrier is a detraction for people to understand some others. However, it's just one form of communication and there are other ways to communicate as well. I mean, one of the jobs that I have at the moment that I do is working with deaf blind people, and I have to communicate through sensory interaction, through sign language, through braille, through hand under hand kind of touch. And this is kind of other forms of communication which are more universal, let's say. You could even say mathematics is a form of universal communication. So it's more to language than what it seems.
Because you've been through that journey of learning another language. So if you're, I know you're a tutor for people with disabilities and children, and so you've been through that journey, so you can relate to people who are also trying to learn language in another way.
Definitely. I had to learn English quite quickly when I moved into this country when I was 9 years old. I had some of the kind of raw underpinning, some of the grammar, but to actually put it into practice was more difficult. I actually found that in foreign countries, in countries where they teach English, the grammar is taught very well. I have experience of teaching students from different countries, teaching English to them in a certain setting, in a summer school setting here in the UK. And I found that their grammar was really good. So their grasp was English is good, but they didn't know how to kind of put it into speech. And when they vocalized it, there were a lot of kind of mistakes and they were worried about tenses and grammatical forms and so forth. So I think we have quite quick propensity to learn language. It's just about practice and making sure that you kind of iron out the creases and just verbalize it.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that because I think a lot of British children learning foreign languages in the UK, they find it difficult to learn grammar and it's kind of taught in a very strange way. So it's maybe a different way of teaching. But could you tell me a bit more about your involvement in Extinction Rebellion and how language links to your very good work in Extinction Rebellion?
Sure. Well, joining Extinction Rebellion, being part of the movement, came from here, came from the heart, really, in a sense of wanting to take part in a movement which was trying to address the biggest issue of our day to day, which is climate change and the climate crisis and the ecological crisis that we face as a species. Knowing things like 200 species a day are being lost, is pretty staggering. Things which kind of blow your brains essentially, as to the kind of reality that's taking place and the gross exploitation of nature. And Extinction Rebellion kind of filled this gap, that this yearning gap that needed to be filled in our society, for people to kind of rise up and to take action. And it really attracted me, the messaging, the slogans, the kind of ethos and the principles behind it. I thought were very ethically sound and in keeping with my conscience, with what I was trying to practice in my life. In terms of the language aspects, I initially didn't bring the poetry and the art into the protest, but I saw there was a real connection here. All my life, I was stimulated writing poetry through listening to socially conscious hip hop music, a hip hop music which was addressing social justice issues of our time, sort of inequality, homelessness, poverty, sort of civil rights, and so forth. And I saw that actually, if I bring it back to where I got my inspiration from in the first place, was what social justice issues, it was kind of addressing these issues of our time, then maybe I could reach out in a greater way. Through writing eco poetry, poetry that defends nature, poetry that is trying to address some of the reasons why we got into this certain place. And I thought, let's start writing poetry and doing some workshops for people which help out with this. And there's something that I've done throughout the rebellions.
So do you think you can reach out to people with your propensity for language more than other people who are maybe not so eloquent? Do you think it's very important to with your poetry that you're reaching out to more people?
Yes, yeah. I think language is the form of communication that we use on a day-to-day basis. Is what we are used to, culturally understood and conditioned to receive and transmit. So I believe that if we use language in the right way, it's a very, very powerful tool to kind of almost to transmit a whole consciousness, a whole kind of reality to another person, to another group of people, to actually initiate ideas, feelings, and action, which could actually be very, very powerful. It could change a lot of different aspects. And that's why I'm hoping that, for me, poetry is a prime form of kind of actually reaching out and on a feelings-based, experience-based notion of where you're coming from, connecting to another person or to a whole group of people.
And you write poetry anywhere and everywhere, don't you, Lee? But you don't just sit down at home and think, right, I'm going to write some poetry. You write it out and about. And there's a video of you, I think on your Twitter page, of you on the pink boat during the last October, I think it was October Uprising, and you're standing there and you're delivering your poetry.
Yeah, that's right.
Could you tell me more about standing on the pink boat and delivering your poetry to communicate to people who are there?
Yes, yeah, that was great. So alongside Mary Duggan, who's another N4 poet, it was both of us who are on the pink boat. It was during the North London Uprising, which was specifically for the whole of North London. And Enfield, as a local borough, were involved. We helped to do some of the choirs. We helped to do some of the processions. Some people were manning stalls and acting as stewards and things like this. So it was a very successful event. It was on a Sunday when we both got to perform in a pink boat. It was for 1 hour. And me and Mary were just exchanging poems. And it was great. It was right next to Turnpike Lane Station. And just that public availability of getting poetry to the masses was quite life-defining in a way. When I look back on it, it made me realize the power of poetry and how sometimes poetry has been marginalized and kept to these small communities, when in fact it should be something that everyone should be able to understand and actually receive and take part in some way.
And you wrote a poem called It Comes in Waves, which you wrote during a night shift during the October Rebellion. Would you like to read a couple of lines or a verse from that?
Yeah, absolutely. I can definitely read a poem. It's not going to take too long, maybe about a minute or something.
Oh, that'd be great.
It comes in waves. And as you rightly said, I wrote it on a night shift whilst being at the October Rebellion in Trafalgar Square. It comes in waves. Wave after wave, we hit the crescendos. The high notes sought after the low. When rebellion is in full swing, we note down songs. String theory pondering, overall reversals. And hearses stuck in reverse. This is change. Strung out against goalposts. Emergency wrung dry. Polarizing opposition by melting fried onions. Into stars that stare bright by candlelight. An irascible orange victor holding a torch of liberty. Forget to boil the excess dregs that clog systems reliant on cleanliness. The vacuum cleaner picks up shingle and soil. Horse guards stand awaiting plectrum rings. Touched to perfection by guiding direction towards concentrated beads of energy glistening. The rain fell softly upon my dripping toes as gas evaporates unknowingly to human spirits. Clashing embattled scars that hold tasered wounds when authority sticks two fingers up to you, creating resentment for snide retaliation, culling sensibilities that respect two-tone beats. Green eyes pierce blue heavens around purple highways. Pear-shaped love has foibles underwritten by dreamers. How whistles turn memories into short-term pleasures that recreates oscillations like a voice box recorder.
Thank you, Lieber. The imagery is very, very powerful in your work. How do you think, there's enough BAME inclusion within green movements and local community action? And how does your words, your poetry link into that?
Right. This is something that as of late I've become more interested in and more aware of as a topic. And this is what you're talking about is Black and minority ethnic inclusion. People from ethnic minorities being included into environmental activism and environmental sector. Now, since I've been applying for some jobs as I'm looking to move to Bristol, I've been interested in environment sector. And after doing some research, I found out that the environment sector is the second least diverse sector of all employment sectors in the UK, after farming, which is quite shocking. It's showing how traditional it is and how wrapped up it is in white middle class culture predominantly. And Extinction Rebellion, amongst other environmental activist groups, have been targeted and criticized for this, this lack of diversity, lack of inclusion. One thing that I'd like to say as being part of the movement is I've never felt discriminated against. I've always been accepted into certain roles. I've been coordinator for a local group, coordinator for my affinity group, and I haven't been challenged or discriminated against in some way. I've always been supported to take up those roles. However, there is a larger systemic and larger kind of environmental sector-based work to do here. I think the sector needs to reach out to individuals who are from these communities and make sure the voices are represented. If they are put into positions of command, responsibility, for example, more managerial positions or coordination positions, it would draw in more people who are of similar backgrounds. I've actually written a poem addressing this, which I could perform just quickly. It's quite a short one.
And, okay, thank you, Lieber. Thank you.
Because it's such an issue that's been talked about, and as one of the only people from the community, from BAME community, I've been asked several times to write something about this. So this one is called To Be Different. Nonviolent conformity to cultural expectations has tainted the underbelly of discriminatory classes, an unheeded resentment from breaking the mold. Those souls previously oppressed find it difficult to rise up against familial structures and ethnic divisions. When people ask me, why is this movement white and middle class? I respond by looking inside the question and its paranoia, that inclusivity truly exists here as we're helping everyone. It's just that those with time and energy tend to be privileged. Whilst minorities struggle to gain acceptance for being different, the irony of fitting in and being conditioned in a Western society has supplemented an identity crisis and a need for revolution.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you, Lieber. I mean, do you think it starts in school, that kind of that feeling that you don't want to join Extinction Rebellion, or people might not even think about joining Extinction Rebellion? Maybe they think that, you know.
Yeah, that's part of it. But I think it's so culturally conditioned, as I was pointing to in my poem, is this idea that in our families, from our backgrounds, I came from fairly poor working class background as a son of a migrant, essentially. And the expectations for someone like myself is to earn money, to have a successful career, to be able to provide for my family and for themselves. And this is a position a lot of people who are from my background face. Therefore, they don't really have the time or the energy to get involved in these movements. They're more worried about making ends meet and to be able to keep living and surviving. And this is one of the reasons why I'm trying to reach out and make sure that people who are from disadvantaged backgrounds, who are more vulnerable, who come from different backgrounds. I would like to include them and make sure that it's really vital that your voice is being heard. Some people feel less confident to do that for various reasons, maybe more pressured to be a certain way. And this is one of my missions really in life to reach out and help these individuals.
Growing up with your parents, did they kind of tell you the importance of green movements and to get involved and make your voice heard, or did that come from you?
That was predominantly from me. I would like to think that my mom and dad instilled very good values in me. So my parents, they raised me well whilst I was in Norway, especially. I was kind of incubated in this very warm and kind of loving layer. It's a very community focused in a kind of small town that I grew up in Norway, and the neighbors and general community made me feel very good and made me feel very embedded and included. And I think that's where I got a lot of my integrity and kind of the ethical conscience that came through. I like to also think from my Hindu religion, from understanding the Dharma, from understanding ancient scriptures has also guided me in a certain sense. And also just points of contact through, for example, as I alluded to earlier, conscious lyrical hip hop music, which I would really go into as a teenager when I went to school here. Amongst other influences, as we all know from reading from friends and so forth.
Wonderful. So it's a bit like when you were growing up in Norway, that kind of small community, people getting to know each other and caring about each other. When you meet up with Extinction Rebellion colleagues, you're kind of almost recreating that, and you realize the importance of people getting together and caring about each other and standing up for what they believe in, I guess. What do you think is the solution going forward to have more BAME inclusion? What would you say is the solution? How can society help, I guess, including with language as well?
I think there's work to be done within these communities, within the BME communities themselves, and also for wider society to reflect that and to help reducing the barriers to entry, essentially, for people from different backgrounds to get to positions where they can have greater influence. I think that's something that I'd like to see more. But within the communities themselves, I think a lot of work can be done, movement building, maybe just more availability of workshops or talks or gatherings, forums and so forth like this, where people are able to get together and deliberate and exchange more openly, just for these communities I'm talking about. So for Black and minority communities, there's a movement actually very interesting called Wretched of the Earth, named after a colonial writer called Frantz Fanon, who wrote in the 60s, influenced by Jean-Paul Sartre, existentialism, things like this. And this movement, Wretched of the Earth, is trying to address rather climate justice, but is purely representing Black and minority groups or marginalized groups like LGBTQI. And it's drawing in these influences and trying to movement build through workshops, through talks, through forums, like I'm saying, and actually having this discussion as to why our communities aren't getting involved so much, and trying to create this atmosphere where people can be included and talk about this, and we can do our own thing, talking specifically to do with decolonization and to do with the history of where we come from.
Have you been able to reach out to many people with your poetry? Have people contacted you and said, "Wow, I was inspired by that, and I want to get involved with XYZ, meetings happening?" Has anybody said that to you?
Yes, yeah. I've been performing poetry for a while now, for many years, since I was 23, so that was about 5 years ago. And I've had many positive comments. I've been very fortunate enough to have people come to me. It doesn't happen on every night, every time I read. Sometimes it's a short kind of quip, a short comment. Sometimes it's very long, and we get into a big discussion about things. But you're right. We generally kind of have some sort of exchange. Some people are interested in the actual topic or the content that I'm talking about, or where I'm coming from, because it could be quite reference specific. A lot of my poems tend to be, around a certain sphere of references or influences or a certain time and space that I wrote it in. So some people are more drawn to it than others.
And I noticed that you have a book. When you were performing at the Enfield Voices Social at Johnny Farmer's in October, you brought a beautiful kind of notebook. And I love that, the way you kind of just write it down with a fountain pen rather than typing it. Can you tell me a bit more about your life as a poet and writer in Enfield? Is it the Poetry Society that you attend quite regularly in Enfield?
Yes. So the Poetry Society is a national organization for poetry. It's in UK-wide. It's the largest organization for poetry. And within the Poetry Society, there are smaller groups. So one of them is Enfield, of course, an Enfield Stanza group, which is run by Mary Duggan, as I alluded to earlier, who's a very good friend of mine. We've been on this kind of journey as poets within Enfield for a few years now. And it's quite incredible to see that over time, this idea of community has really forged the basis behind what I really want to get into. So as I talked to about earlier, in Norway, I had a very strong community, a strong kind of neighborhood presence. And I wanted to bring that to Enfield and bring that to the local community here. Since I joined the local group of Enfield Extinction Rebellion, which I helped to start in May, it's been amazing just getting to know people who are similar minded and coming up with actions, putting that intention together, where you have this shared common goal, shared common purpose, and knowing that you're there for each other, creating this inclusive community. And coming from that, poetry is a little bit like this. We have the same faces who come every month. Enfield Poets has been going for many years, since 2000. I think it was in Salisbury House earlier, and it's recently moved to the Dugdale House in Enfield Town. And it's run by a couple who are really lovely. And the poetry event happens once a month, first Saturday of every month. And I've been going for about 3-4 years. And same faces, different poems every time, but there's a connection there. We all kind of support each other and push each other to start create more or reimagine the boundaries of what poetry is or spur each other on creatively.
If people want to get involved in poetry and writing, would you like to see more people attend the Dugdale Centre at these meetings? And how can they join?
Absolutely, I encourage more people to join, especially people who are young, who are from different marginalised communities, whether that be ethnic community or LGBTQI communities or other communities. I'd like to see more representation because at the moment, a lot of people who attend this are white, quite middle class, fairly older. And not that I have a problem with these people, but it's something that I like to see. So more people are drawn as a wider cross-section of what society in Enfield is really like. I encourage anyone and everyone to join. There's workshops happening in Enfield as well, run by experienced poets who are tutors. There are other talks or exhibitions or events happening, readings. There's also one in Palmer's Green that happens every 6 months in April and October. So there's plenty of opportunities for people to get involved.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I hope more people do join because it sounds like a really good way of expressing yourself. We're coming towards the end of the webinar, but could you just quickly tell us a bit about the future? Will you be doing more rebellion with Extinction Rebellion? And you're going to be moving to Bristol soon, and you're going to be doing like more horticultural kind of therapy and nature connection. Can you tell us a bit about the way you see LIBA going into the future?
Absolutely. And yeah, you mentioned about horticulture therapy and nature connection as something that I've intensely become interested in. So last year I did a horticultural certificate and course, which is RHS accredited at Capel Manor College in Enfield. And since then I really become quite deeply interested in horticulture and the aspects of nature connection. And nature is a form of therapy, ultimately, ecotherapy. This idea that people who are vulnerable or just adults themselves can connect to nature to heal themselves, to make themselves feel better, to feel more connected to themselves and the environment around them. I think nature is the key, really, ultimately. We are nature. Sometimes we forget this, but human nature is part of nature itself in the wider sense. And that's the kind of direction that I'm following as a career path or as a job, as a means. I would like to see myself get into this field of nature conservation, environment, and also just connection. So helping adults, children, disadvantaged people to come into contact with nature, to as a form of therapy, as a form of healing, as a form of well-being. And I'm going to move to Bristol soon for various reasons, one of them being that London's very expensive. Another reason is that Bristol is more of a community feel. There's a lot of community action taking place and it's very creative. There's a lot of poetry happening there as well. So that's my next chapter in life.
So maybe you can have both a life in Enfield and Bristol, and you can bring the two together, because you are quite an international person as well. So the way you think is very international. But I'd like to thank you very much, Liba, for talking to us. And there's so much we could talk to you about. And we wish you all the best with continuing your life and poetry in Enfield, but also your plans for Bristol as well. And I think you're going to be writing a lot more poetry on the train as well, because I understand you've been writing poetry on the train. thank you very much for talking to us, and we will end this webinar now.